ladies and gentlemen. This is Jay Michaels, and welcome to The Passion Pit. This is a podcast about the world of independent arts and artists. Let's start with a headline. A headline of an email that greeted me today. The New York International Fringe Festival, ever hear of it, needs your support, or we will cease to operate at the end of the year. It seems a staple of New York's independent theater was ignored this year by the State Council on the Arts and the city's Department of Cultural Affairs. Great. I was going to jump into a diatribe about how New Yorkers only see Broadway, but I'm wrong there. They don't. They don't see any theater on any regular basis of any kind. Why? It's too expensive. Thus, commercial theater is becoming more and more for tourists. And in this time of year, bah humbug, especially so. Rent is going up. Cost of living, the same. Salaries, not so much. So what does that have to do with us here in the off-off world of independent theater? With Broadway becoming similar to the Icecapades, this makes our cause, the new fascinating learning experience called independent theater, that much more invisible. We are reaching the point of being totally ignored. We need to create a world where there are specific reviewers, writers, supporters, publishers, videographers, photographers, etc., to write about the shows and to find new ways for audiences to know they exist. We need to make these plays done with a heart on a limited budget and a limited run a necessity. This little program here is designed to shine a light on productions that are happening downtown or way uptown or in a borough or past 9th Avenue in Manhattan, or that just seem too weird for the regular crowd. I want to be able to introduce you to productions like Someone Who Will Watch Over Me, about what it feels like to be held hostage, or The Brutes, about what happens right before Lincoln was assassinated, what happened to the Booth brothers, that is, or a takeoff on the prison system, or a powerful gothic love story told through dance. Or maybe just hear Hansel and Gretel told to your kids right to their faces in an intimate setting. We need to treat independent theater like a party, an art exhibit, anything but an impulse item. Broadway may even save up and plan for a night in the theater like some people plan for trips to Europe. But for off-off-Broadway, audiences check the weather, their mood, and if the train is running local, and then decide if they want to see something. It always amazes me that Hamilton can go for $800 a ticket, but a $25 showcase receives how much? Any discounts? A powerful work about an important topic presented by the true priests and priestesses of the Temple of the Theater will be bypassed because The Walking Dead promises a surprise in its episode. We must persist. We must scream. Joseph Papp, the creator of the public theater, used to give back grants saying they were worthier companies than his. This production will show you some of those companies. So I finally figured out how to work the recording device on my phone and have begun interviewing friends and colleagues, and I'm having a blast. Let's learn about their productions. Here's one. Yesterday, amid the blizzard, the Animus Theater Company opened a story about resilience. Three men held captive by a mysterious terrorist organization in Someone Who Will Watch Over Me. Let's hear about it from the company's artistic director, Jonathan Judge Russo.
Jonathan Judge Russo.
Hello, sir.
This is Jay Michaels. How are you? You're on a recorded line, quality assurance, and all of that good stuff.
Excellent. How's it going, man?
So far, so good. Can't complain.
All right. Yeah,
all right.
I got a busy day with these podcasts. This is great, man.
I am thrilled. I am thrilled. Independent theater needs as much publicity as it can get, especially when we have great shows like yours. Someone Who'll Watch Over Me. Three men held captive by captors or terrorists, however the show depicts it. Really fascinating, really timely. But let's start with you. Tell us all about you and Animus.
All right. Well, I guess starting with me, I'm a Brooklyn guy, right? So I grew up in Bay Ridge.
Yay, same here. I'm in Bay Ridge even as we speak.
See, that's so good. We should just stop there and let's just go get some Italian pastries and call it a day.
Works for me. I'll be at L&B in a half hour. I'll see you then.
See, how am I supposed to focus on anything else when you talk about Spumoni? I came up. I'm a Brooklyn guy. Went to grammar school in Park Slope. Went to high school at Regis on the Upper East Side. Stuck with the Jesuits. Down to Baltimore for college. Went to Loyola, and then came back to Circle in the Square to, I guess, round out my studies, doing some conservatory work after I got my bachelor's. So, yeah, so, I mean, as far as me as an actor goes, I wasn't really aiming at this when I was much younger. I was much more interested in playing baseball and seeing where that might take me. And I did speech and debate in high school, which was a nice, I suppose, impetus for me to get the idea of getting up in front of a room and keeping people entertained or enthralled for as long as I could hold them. And then when I got to college, that wasn't really an option. So I started getting on stage. I caught the bug a little bit. And then during my undergraduate studies, when I would come home in the summers, I would try to put myself in summer conservatories around the city. So I went to the Actors Center one summer. The next summer, I ended up doing a Juilliard program with the British Academy. So I was in Oxford for a summer. And then I ended up at Stella Adler doing their Chekhov intensive for a summer. So those were all the things that led me to understand that I needed to continue formal training, that I wanted to have more serious training once I finished my undergrad. I got lucky while I was in Baltimore. I decided on a whim when I was a junior to audition for something off campus, which was not really something people did at Loyola, and ended up in the Baltimore Shakespeare Festival, worked with the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company after that. So I spent a year after I graduated working in Baltimore professionally, and then I came home, did Circle in the Square for a couple of years. And through my time at Circle in the Square, I came in contact with some extraordinary people. Certainly everyone's mentor is Alan Langdon, who is directing this production of Someone Who Watch Over Me.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really special. It's really special. It's, he's the man. He is the man. There's really no other way to describe him other than that. He is the most committed artist that I have ever encountered. And, what he brings is incredibly special. So when we were in school, between meeting him and a couple of other classmates who I thought were really committed to the work as well, you know, it kept coming up that when you graduate, you should make your own work, you know, because the commercial side of the business is what it is, and you become a commodity, and it's how you'll support yourself and you'll do what you need to do in that arena. But, you know, having some sense of ownership and creative control and really never stopping the hustle as far as creating your own work.
So you really support support the notion of independent theater. You're not one of those horrible people who says, okay, I'll do it now until you support it, which is great.
I do. I think, you know, when you come out of school, I think, you know, you start out and you're full of piss and vinegar. You know what I mean? And I think you say, all right, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to make my own work. And you don't really know how the commercial side is going to go for you. It could happen fast. It could happen slow. It could happen at a trickle's pace. It's very hard to say. And certainly one of the biggest parts of creating independent theater and being a part of it is learning how to manage what might come your way commercially. So, you know, we as a company sort of faced that down after about a year's worth or 6 months worth of existence. I ended up booking a national tour and I had to leave the city for a while, and we hadn't really put any plans in place as to what would happen if I were to go away. So, you know, you run into things like that. And so we pushed the pause button for a little while, but, you know, I'm really committed to working with people from Circle in the Square. I'm really committed to creating work of a high caliber, I hope. And so when I came back, I said, all right, look, you know, we didn't really have our contingencies set the way we could have, but we know a little bit more now, and let's get back at it. And so
Excellent.
So we brought a couple of more Circle people into the fold after I got back from that tour, and then we kind of took off from there.
That's great. You're obviously a proponent of education. You're obviously you're not someone who, okay, I've graduated college, now I'm just going to become an actor. You're one who believes in honing the craft in institutions as well.
I do believe in that. I mean, I think education was really just a huge part of my life. Both of my parents are educators. they met while getting their PhDs at NYU. So, educational pursuits are some things that I have grown up with. So, I just think it's the most important part of being a human, I think, is just to continue to study and to lead the most examined life possible. And that certainly applies to being a good actor, I think. But I think, a self-examined life is the most important kind. And I think the more you learn about what's going on around you, the more you learn about yourself and vice versa. So
that brings me up to
kind of hammered into me. Yeah.
That brings me up to your show itself. A lot of the people I speak to, they say the same thing. They say that we're seeing in commercial theater a lot of mindless stuff. We're seeing a lot of revival. We're seeing a lot of, let's put a cartoon on Broadway and see if it floats. You're not taking anything like that. You're taking a very timely, very topical piece, really hard hitting when you get right down to it. It's a parable, an American, a Brit, and an Irishman walk into a terrorist's den, .. tell us about Someone Will Watch Over Me. How timely is it? Is it something when we walk away from it, are we going to go, oh my God, this could happen right now? Are we going to feel it that way?
I think it's possible. I think even more than thinking, oh, this could happen right now, I think there's a sense that this is happening right now. And I think that's what,
that's great.
I think that's maybe what's sort of most upsetting, but also important about the piece. I mean, I think it's impossible to hear stories about journalists who are being held captive and murdered abroad, or aid workers who are being held captive and murdered abroad. And these are just stories that popped up for us during our rehearsal process. So, yeah. I mean, they are the tip of the iceberg, I suppose. And that's why I think it's so important. And I think at the end of the day, it's a story about humanity and resilience. I think we can draw parallels to what's going on in the world, and some of them are on the page, and I think some of them will exist in the eyes of the beholders, I suppose. The audience members will bring their life experiences to this and bring their experiences with the state of socio-political affairs to this, and they'll see what they see. But at the same time, I think what's happening across the board in theater these days is that the great story is becoming harder and harder to find, I think. I think there's a lot going on in terms of the commercial activity of theater and what that means in terms of certain productions and their place in the market. And I think there's also, not just the Broadway spectacle, but also, when it comes to responding to what's going on in the world right now, there are a lot of stories that are being written quickly in response to what's happening. And I think it's not always easy to respond quickly and powerfully to what's going on while also remaining committed to the story itself. I think that's the thing that sucks the audience in, rather than allows the audience to feel like they are being talked at. Huh. And I think what Frank McGinnis has done with this piece, even having written it in 91 in response to the Lebanese hostage crisis, I think he's created this timeless piece because what he does is he focuses on the humanity of the men portrayed in this cell and how they are able to survive together. And I think that's what the best storytellers do. So I think there's a lot going on. in terms of theater these days, and there's a lot of good, and I think there's just a lot of reactionary stuff, and I think, you know, it's hard to respond to what's going on in the world and do so creatively with the best stories.
You hit an interesting point you say about being, yeah, really, you hit the point of saying talk at. Here's the devil's advocate question. Do you think both sides of the fence, as it were politically, could come to see your show and be moved by it?
I do. And I think that's kind of the point of it. I think the point of this piece and the stuff that we try to put out into the world is that, you know, you come into the room with whatever you got. You know, I mean, you carry with you whatever you got, whoever you are. And for however long we ask your attention, what we try to bring to the party is an example of humanity and an example of the resilience of the human spirit. And I think, regardless of what side of the fence you're on, there is this, I think everybody can come together over the tenet of fighting for what's important, fighting for humanity and coming together as human beings. And I think regardless of, you know, political agenda or political affiliations, I think you're looking at three guys who are in some ways diametrically opposed to each other. Some on nationalistic levels, some on political levels. But they are put in circumstances where they have to stick it out together. And that's the way you get through it. And it's unfortunate that it's often the most dire circumstances that bring people together. Mm. But it's not necessarily unfortunate when you remind people.
So this is not a political story so much. This is one might almost call it the parable. You're showing whoever you are, wherever you are, you must work together. We are one person when you get right down to it. We are humanity as opposed to parties and things like that.
I think so. I think that, you know, what we draw upon as artists in our pursuit in this story are any number of things, but I think one of the best parts is in one of the editions of the play, there's a foreword that's written by a man named Brian Keenan, who was held as a prisoner during the Lebanese hostage crisis for 4.5 years. And it's an extraordinary story. He's written his story. His book is called An Evil Cradling. But the point of all of that is we were listening to an interview he gave, I want to say it was 10, 15 years after his release. And he, someone who lived through the most dire circumstances, was able to, in his attempts to find mutuality between he and his captors, said succinctly, he said, you know, I don't profess to be an expert on the political situations. I don't profess to be, somebody that you're going to come to who's going to explain everything in the best possible way. But I can tell you that, you know, the same way we were chained to the walls, they were chained to their guns. And I always thought, you know, if this guy can find that mutuality and that level of humanity in what he's experiencing and how he's describing his experience, then, you know, what business do we have as, I want to say, mere mortals, you know, not exploring that sense of humanity? So,
it's funny you say that. I worked many years ago with Holocaust survivors, with Elie Wiesel, with Ernie Michel and whatever. And they had that same sense of, okay, we must go on. You know, we must still find the light regarding any of this. So you hit a very valid point. He hit a very valid point with that.
Yeah, it's profound.
Let's, what will we learn about the show that's not in the press release? Tell me something that nobody knows.
What will we learn about the show. That
tell us something that nobody knows and they're not supposed to know.
Well, see, the tricky thing is I don't want to give too much away. This is an important piece not to come in knowing a secret about. But from the moment the audience walks in the door to the theater space, when they leave the lobby and they enter the theater, they will immediately be put in the position of having a sense of these guys' captivity.
Ooh.
That's not something that the press release would tell you, but I think the audience can expect, I don't want to say immersion, because I think that conjures too many different things these days when it comes to theater, but I think the audience will be able to experience these men in captivity from the moment they walk in the door. Let's put it there.
Okay, so now I'm more excited to see the show.
Excellent.
Jonathan, thank you so much. Needless to say, you open tomorrow night, and on the podcast I'll give everyone all the information on how they can get tickets and things like that. It is a thrill to speak to you, and may someone who will watch over me make a huge difference in the world and propel your company exactly where it should go.
Hey, from your lips, man. We really appreciate it, as always. Thanks, Jack.
My pleasure. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Ciao.
Talk to you, man.
Thank you, Mr. Russo. Someone Who Will Watch Over Me by Frank McGinnis runs November 15 through December 9. That's Thursday through Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. No performances on November 22nd, but a special matinee on November 24 at 3 p.m. They're at the Cherry Lane Theater, 38 Commerce Street, between Barrow and Bedford Streets, New York City. You could visit www.animustheater.org or jmichaelsarts.com for more information. I would be remiss if I did not say thank you to two individuals. Number one, my producer and partner in life and crime, Mary Elizabeth McCary, whose technical wizardry is beyond my ken, and the group Human Wire for their song Fighting Naked, which is the theme song for our podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and I will be seeing you at the next podcast. And remember, if you got a couple of 20s burning a hole in your pocket, you can go see a play. Thank you, and have a good one.
These walls keep closing in to practice chains and blather. plug dumb mouths like horses, scared of all the not noises poking into our dreams.
While in the distance, glistening, that wall of bones, it holds our tongues, and scared of all the taste but roses.